We're going to talk about this new album that you have out, and I've really enjoyed listening to the music on here. Interesting ideas going on in the background. Why don't we just dive right into the centerpiece, which is the Archangel Piano Concerto. And this is in two movements. I'm going to let you talk about it, but I'll just set it up by saying that there are two different parts here. The first part is sort of this, action movie kind of fight between the Archangel Michael and the forces of Satan, right, as depicted by John Milton in Paradise Lost. And then your second half takes us into the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve and the serpent tempting them as depicted in Genesis. Can you just give us sort of an overview of this? You talk about it in terms of the immortal struggle between good and evil. Is that what you are depicting in this music?
Oh, no question about it. And when I was when I decided to write the piece, coincidentally at the same time, I had for some odd reason been drawn to read Paradise Lost again. I had read it in my early 20s when I was at Columbia College as an English major. And I can say that at the age of 20 or whatever I was, maybe it was 18, I had no idea what was going on. It went right over my head. The language is florid. It's of a certain period. And but when I went back, I saw that Milton depicted in the most incredible terms definitely the fight that we are all engaged in if we are looking to cure the evils of the world, which is how do we restore sanity. And, you know, this was done, I don't know, two, 3 years before. It was composed 2-3 years before all of this horrible pandemic we're going through, which is, I think, a clarion call for all of us to think about what is good in our life and how to restore it. So I was inspired very much by Paradise Lost for the first movement of my half-hour piano concerto. And the second half was inspired, certainly, by another look at good and evil in how it affects human beings. And the first taste of that in our society, in our background, common background, is, of course, Adam and Eve and the arrival of Satan in the form of the serpent. So my Archangel Concerto for Piano and Orchestra was certainly a piece that is certainly a piece that is concerned with those very large issues in the epic sense. You know, the archangel fighting the devil before time begins, and then by our ancestors Adam and Eve, whether we believe in the Bible or Louis Leakey, it's a very powerful story, and the taking of a couple who are personal and in love and pushing them out into the world that we live in now. And it's something we're all involved in, whether we realize it or not.
I noticed the music. I mean, of course, it all shares a kinship because it's all written by you, of course. It's your voice. But there's a completely different tone, it seems, in the first part. It's a little more action-packed. It's a little more driven towards a conclusion. And the second part seems to be more kind of ominous and a little more subtle. Could you characterize the difference in your musical approach between those two stories?
Oh, sure. I mean, the story that starts the book, book one, you know, is of course right out of Paradise Lost, and it is an epic. It is a. I love writing a large scale work like that, and it is. It's been compared by one person, one interviewer, to Mahler's Eighth in a strange way, but it's a very interesting comparison. So it is a very large form with, as you put, action packed, which is a very much the case. Adam and Eve start out, as you know, just the creation of Adam from nothing, and then Eve, and then the falling in love of a man and a woman in that case. And it's sublime. It's in paradise. Eden is paradise. The wonderful word in Italian is paradiso, as you know. And then the arrival of the serpent. This is in the form of a contrabassoon, which is, by the way, called serpent.
Yeah.
In some, you know, it was originally a serpent instrument. I was recently at the Boston Symphony's, before this all hit, Boston Symphony's a great hall up in Massachusetts, and they have a museum there, and they have old instruments, and there were several serpents, you know, that might have been used in a Mendelssohn piece.
Yeah.
So when they're in the form of serpents, they have, you know, tails, and they look like a big snake. The movement, the second movement, is quite intimate, initially at least. And I've said that this is about the most programmatic piece I've ever written. You to talk about opera, which I'm involved in, it's certainly a dramatic work. And I mean others have remarked that they don't know of any other piano concerto that does what I do in this piece, which makes it, for me, very happy experience. And I was very much blessed with the recording. We did it just 11 months ago at the BBC National Orchestra of Wales in Cardiff, which I conducted in the recording session. And we had the most fabulous pianist, Stephen Beck, who is one of the primary great, I would say, new music pianists of New York City. He also plays as associate principal in the New York Philharmonic and with the Brooklyn Knights. And he's just an amazing, great talent, and the recording is special. And what you hear there, by the way, is there aren't many, do-overs or multiple takes. He's such a phenomenal talent that he was able to put it down very quickly. So we recorded the entire concerto in one day, and and the orchestra was just on its feet. They would, I could not say how wonderfully they played and how responsive they were to him and to me. It was one of those experiences where we were all flying off our seats, you know, collectively. And people were just remarking how great it was. And it's a special recording, I think.
How long did it take for this project to come to fruition from your first conception of it? I know it was funded in part by a Kickstarter campaign. That was a success. How long has this been sort of germinating for you?
You know, I have to go back in my mind because I'm always working on multiple things, but I was approached by a fairly well-known pianist who I will not name his name, who wanted me to write a piano concerto for him so that he could then get performances.
Yeah.
It wasn't that he loved my music so much, it was just that he wanted to get performances. He does it with a good number of contemporary composers. Well, I wrote the piece, and then he thought it wasn't for him, it was too difficult. So I at that point, I did it fairly quickly. I mean, when I have a deadline to do something, I do it quite, you know, it's a number of months.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was about a 4 to 6 month process. I compose also in full score. I do not do what we call short score, meaning, you know, in 2 to 4 staves, I compose in full score. It comes out of my being a conductor, too, I think. I didn't always do that. My first opera I wrote in short score and then orchestrated it. But I find in writing for ensemble, small or large, if I write in full score, I'm thinking of the instruments as they play, you know, and not thinking piano music that's then orchestrated.
You mentioned the pandemic, of course, that we're all operating under, and there's no real end in sight right now at this point. And many people have told me the different ways that they've been coping under it. You as a composer, I mean, are you working on a project now? Have you been able to immerse yourself in something?
Yes. Yeah. But let me give you a little health background. At the end of March, I live in northern Westchester County in New York, about an hour north of the city. At the end of March, I came down with COVID-19 and COVID pneumonia. And wow. I was in the hospital for 5 days. I was not in oxygen, thank God, or respirator. Thank God for that. And I was there for 5 days. But I had a fairly serious case. I had fever for over 2 weeks, and it was dreadful. And, you know, I thought about my family and my lady and getting out of this. And I also thought about the fact that I have a lot of composing to do. Phil Glass has a funny thing which he talks about, where he says that the reason he exercises so much is in his 80s is that he's got a lot of notes in his head he still wants to get down, you know. Mm. And I understand that. I really do. But, you know, I want to write The Slave, which is the Isaac Bashevis Singer opera. And I want to finish right now working on a violin concerto that I'm writing for Timothy Fain, the great violinist. Yeah. Who's worked with me many times, Tim Fain. He's just incredible. So I'm writing a violin concerto for him now, and it has no program. Archangel's an unusual piece in that it does have a program. This is a piece of absolute music, but I would say that it is informed by my experience. And my experience tells me that in music, I have been doing something all my life, which I didn't quite realize, it didn't crystallize the way it has now, that I very much feel that music can, in its way, try to cure the difficulties and problems that we live through.
Yeah.
I think that certainly Lenny thought of that when he wrote Mass. There are other pieces that go way back. I mean, like Missa Solemnis, which is very much the case. Gustav Mahler's music for me is very much occupied by this issue. And even if you go to the St. Matthew Passion, you have it. You know, there's an attention to what is most important. And I'm just not writing music for self-aggrandizement. Never have. It's got to mean something. And it's got to have a purpose beyond just, you know, I just had that performance. Aren't I great? I mean, that is just nonsense. I really try to write pieces that make a difference, whether they're very personally written and have a personal connection to people or have an epic feeling, Ray Archangel does. So, you know, this particular piece has been striking. We recorded it a year ago, as I mentioned, with the BBC. It was broadcast on BBC, but then, since then, it's been broadcast on the CBC, and this all happened when I was in the hospital. This recording has taken off in a way that I never thought was possible with a piano concerto. To date, it's been played on 50 American radio stations, and I just did a Sirius XM broadcast about it on Living American.
Yeah.
And now I'm on your show.
Yeah, we're going to make it 51.
But Brad, it's really incredible. Did I ever think that a piano concerto could have that kind of impact? And also the other thing is, which I want to compliment you, as I know as a performer with a history as a singer and as a broadcaster, that radio, a form that's 100 years old, form of communication, is now our venue for all of us. And the fact that I have this piece that is speaking and singing to people and getting the response that it's getting is, to me, absolutely heartwarming and, at this time, incredible. Because, you know, I had performances scheduled and places to go all over the world, and it's not happening because of what we're going through. I feel very comfortable that I've survived the darn illness. I mean, I'm ecstatic. And I can go on, and I'm hoping for the rest of us we can find that. I'm quite worried And that worry, I think, is in my music now. If you ask the influence of this horrible disease, I think it's going to infect all of us in ways that 9/11 did as well. I mean, I was downtown when it happened. So I've had now two major experiences, which I would rather not have had in my life. So yes, they have very certainly influenced my artistry. I don't, without question.
Can we talk a little bit about some of the other works on here? Because it's not just the Archangel Concerto. There's a wealth of wonderful pieces on here. I want to save the Vidorama for the end because that's a great showpiece. But let's talk a little bit about your the excerpt from your opera here.
Yes. My first opera is based on a play of Federico García Lorca, the great Spanish poet and playwright who we all know. And beloved of those who believe in beauty and freedom. And Lorca wrote a play in Espanol, Amor de Don Pelimplin con Belisa en su jardín, which in English is The Love of Don Pelimplin and Belisa in the Garden. It's a one-act opera. It was premiered by the Opera Theater of Northern Virginia under John Edward Niles. And it is about an old man who marries, through the intercession of his maid, a very young, voluptuous woman, who cuckolds him on his wedding night with the five races of the earth. only Lorca could write such a play. And it's a fantasy, wonderful drama about how this girl kind of finally falls in love with this elderly man, but does she? I won't give away the ending, but the music on Little Pelimplin, which I call my suite, Pelimplinito, Little Pelimplin, an opera suite, S-W-E-E-T, instead of S-U-I-T-E, opera suite, A Lace Paper Valentine for Orchestra. That's the full title, and taken from Lorca somewhat. So the music, the four movements are short. It's kind of a mini symphony, and it's all the entr'acte music of the opera. And recorded, I would say, quite brilliantly by the BBC, National Orchestra of Wales. And then we have Roller Coaster on there.
Yeah.
Which is a four-minute piece that Marin Alsop premiered with the Cabrillo Contemporary Music Festival Orchestra.
In listening to this roller coaster piece, it really takes you on more than just like a conventional roller coaster ride. There's a lot of emotion in this piece. Does it have a biographical component for you at all?
Oh, yes. Yeah, excellent question. First off, as I said to the audience at Cabrillo when it premiered, it is about the ups and downs of life, which is it's a metaphor. You know, I love the Italian word metafore, you know. It's very much a metaphor for what we go through, but it does have a definite biographical element. My grandmother lived in a boarding house in Coney Island. This is my father's mother, who was a saint, a beautiful, beautiful, wonderful woman who would take nothing from us. And I think she barely lived on Social Security in a boarding house. In any event, I went to Coney Island as a kid. And the big noise from Coney Island were the roller coasters. There was the thunder, I think what it was called. But then there was the Cyclone, which is still there, a wooden roller coaster. I never went on it because I was too frightened, but you could walk down Shore Avenue and smell the ocean and the sand and Nathan's hot dogs and all that carny atmosphere, and then you'd hear the roller coaster, people screaming their heads off. So the piece starts with basically kind of a stroll down Shore Avenue, and you hear a car playing, dee-da-da-da, dee-da-da-da, which is Sud del Subway Numero 6, which is kind of a, you know, a Latino radio song.
Yeah.
And then the roller coaster starts, and up it goes slowly, and then it accelerates, and then it comes back, and then you hear Shore Road again, and the sun in the middle of August steaming down on the pavement, and then the roller coaster starts again, and it ends. So, you know, it's a very quick ride on the roller coaster of life, up and down.
I love the way that it ends. There's sort of a sigh of relief, but it's not really relief. I hear that and I think, that's the expression I would give if I was never going to do that again, right?
That's right. So well said.
Now, everybody will know this Charles Vidor piece when they hear it, right? They may not know it by the title, but you've orchestrated this famous organ toccata. And
yes.
When I first listened to it, I thought, well, there's an organ playing with that. I mean, it sounds like the organ, especially at the beginning. And when the brass come in, it sounds very organ. And you've got... You know, different brass and instruments doing these short little notes that sound very much like pedals.
Right.
Talk about the genesis of this piece and how you brought it to the orchestral repertoire.
Well, I can throw a famous name around, but it's one of beloved background. I had the great fortune of meeting Leopold Stokowski on five different occasions. And he was at the end of his life conducting the American Symphony at Carnegie Hall. My teacher, Elie Siegmeister, had been performed by him several times during the 40s. And through Siegmeister, I got to go backstage and talk to Stokey and just be in his presence as a very young person. Hmm. Now, I heard him conduct his Bach arrangements for orchestra.
Yeah.
And, you know, the famous, and also the C minor. Stokey was a magician. He was a sorcerer. And it influenced me. I mean, I'm a devotee of Bach, of course, and I play much of the keyboard music. But I always enjoyed his kind of quasi-Victorian orchestrations of Bach organ pieces. In later life, I became and still am a close friend of the conductor John Malcheri, who conducted, as you know, at the Hollywood Bowl for many, yeah, many years. And for John's 60th birthday, knowing that he was a student and acolyte of Stokowski, I wrote Vidorama for him. Vidorama is Widorama, like Cinerama, exclamation point. And I wrote it as a gift, a 60th birthday gift for John. And he and I are both devotees of film music, so Cinerama means a lot to us. So he immediately got the pun that I did for Vidorama. The piece was later orchestrated by me for the Dallas Winds, and it was premiered with 100 brass and woodwind instruments on the stage of Meyerson Symphony Center in Dallas, conducted by the great Jerry Junkin, who was the primo conductor of wind ensemble music in the country. And that was an amazing performance of 100 players. But I recorded it last year with the BBC National Orchestra of Wales. It's the first thing I conducted in our session together, and they had to get used to me, and I had to get used to them, but we got it. And there is organ at the end. I sneak it in as a pedal point, and then it comes in at the end suddenly before the last few bars. But it's not Stokey style, the Vidorama orchestration of the Charles Marie Vidor toccata. It is my own kind of lean version. Which can be played by any orchestra. I mean, Stokey used like 8 French horns and all kinds of crazy things that he could do with the Philadelphia Orchestra in 1922. But, you know, I did not have that luck, and I know I wouldn't. There's another aspect to this. I had never really heard the piece other than kind of knowing it until I went to a friend's funeral at a huge church on Fifth Avenue. It might have been St. Thomas. I'm not sure. And it was the middle of the late afternoon. It was the late afternoon, I think. And he had 2,000 people in attendance at his funeral. He was such a beloved lawyer, who I knew. He was a lovely guy, but I mean, to have 2,000 people. And I was joking to somebody that I was there. I said, I'll never have that many at mine. I'd be happy to have 10% of that. But in any event, at the end, as the procession, as the recessional happened and the people were walking out, the organist sat down and he exploded with the Chalmerie Vidor toccata from the organ Fifth Symphony. And at the end, I went to the organist and just made sure I understood what it was, and he told me. And that experience just, I will never forget it. So I felt when the time came, and knowing John Macheri's love for Stokey and the arrangements and movie music, and our common love for Korngold and Waxman and Max Steiner and Benny Herman and all those people, I figured I would write the piece. And it's a wonderful tribute, I think, to the music. And I also love Paris, so...
Composer, conductor Michael Shapiro talking about his latest recording, including the Archangel Concerto for Piano and Orchestra, as well as Vidarama that we've been talking about, and a few other pieces on there. Michael, I'm going to link to this from our website. We'll post it online as well. I just want to thank you so much for spending some time talking about it. I've really enjoyed the recording. And very, very happy that you survived your battle with COVID-19.
Thank you.
And, we wish you best of everything to come. And thanks again.
Thank you, Brian.